Fred Film Radio from the 76th Venice International Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2019 Venice International Film Festival. And this is a real treat for me because I always say that my dream later in life, perhaps, is to come here at the festival and not watch any contemporary films, but watch the classic, the restorers, the forgotten films that are screened every year in a section called Venice Classics. Well, we have a special treat for you because we're going to have an extended talk with one of the co-curators of the section, Stefano Francia Di Celle. First of all, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks to you.
And you are the co-curator of the section with Alberto Barbera, who, you know, we all know he's the boss around here, let's say. Another great lover of film, too. I had the chance to meet him. He was a great lover of film. Before we get talking about this section, I believe this is the first time that we actually meet. So
yes, of
just
course.
To break, as an icebreaker, I would like to ask you, when did you realize that you had this passion for movies? Was there a moment in time?
Well, it was a long time ago in my secondary school. I started to organize screenings for my friends in school. I remember the first screening where François Truffaut and Ingmar Bergman. So we had a sort of afternoon with films in the gym of our school, and I realized at that time that studying cinema, loving cinema, could be something very interesting for my life. So I was not sure at that time that this could become a profession. So I always kept on doing other things, and I started university as agronomist.
Wow.
So, but also I used to go to the University of Cinema I was not regularly inscribed to the university, but it was possible to be at the lessons. So I at a certain point I decided to switch to lettere in Italy. At that time there was not the possibility to study cinema and communication, but you had to study humanistic studies.
Yeah, humanistic
and
studies.
And then you could take the degree in cinema. So
right.
I decided to start the university. And then before graduating, I started working for two important festivals in Turin. The gay film festival called Da Sodoma Hollywood, and Turin Film Festival, directed by Alberto Barbera.
Wow.
Actually, the name was Festival Cinema Giovani. It was the Turin Festival before becoming Torino Film Festival. And that was a great moment for classics, because in that time, Festival Cinema Giovani organized a huge and very important retrospective dedicated to the cinema of the 60s, every year a different country. Mm. So with the first retrospective I saw was Nouvelle Vague Francais, and then Czech
New Wave,
Hungarian, and then at a certain point Festival Cinema Giovani organized a retrospective devoted to Brazilian cinema of the 60s.
Wow.
Cinema Novo and Marginal. In that retrospective I was involved as a professional, for looking for prints, making research, creating connection. I was not the curator of the retrospective. The curators were Marco Giusti and Marco Melani, who became sort of mentors for me for doing this retrospective. So to be back to your question, maybe Torino Festival, Cinema Giovani, and then Torino Film Festival has been the best education activity for making Venice Classics.
Yeah.
Because after that, as a curator, I made important things in Torino Film Festival, Alexandra Sakurov retrospective, complete retrospective, Nagisa Oshima complete retrospective, Wim Wenders, Roman Polanski. So this kind of work brought a very important energy in what we are doing here in Venice Classics, because in Venice Classics, as you know, is has been created because Venice decided to stop with retrospective. Venice Film Festival has a great tradition in big complete retrospective, but with the transition to digital, doing a complete retrospective is like a nightmare, because you don't have all prints available, you have to restore a lot of films, and so Venice Classics wants to promote the restoration activity all over the world, and suggesting a lot of retrospective. I mean, we have so many masters in Venice Classics that each of them would deserve a complete retrospective. We can't do it, of course. We leave this to the film archive now. There are important film archives in the world that are doing this. And so, yes, it was a long path, but now... And Alberto Barbera was a great companion at the beginning, in the middle, and now we are... as you know, Alberto Barbera has been directing the Museo Nazionale del Cinema di Torino. So his background and his also relations around the world are very important, because when the selection of Venice is made thanks to the collaboration we established with many film archive distributors, producers, rights holders, very important, and whoever in the world decide to restore a film.
There's a lot involved, basically, yeah. But, I mean, it sounds like discovery is a big part of the pleasure you take from actually putting these programs together. And it's a lot of the pleasure that the people who attend these retrospectives take from attending Venice Classics, is that you are making discoveries of films that were made in the past. And you also discover that some of them maybe get the opportunity to be reevaluated. Some films were famously panned by critics. I can think of a few years ago, Salò by Pasolini was a film that was vilified almost by critics. They just thought it was terrible. And here was where I think the path to legitimization started, when it won the award of the section. Now, that's very interesting, because the awards are given by a jury of film students, right? How does that work?
Yes, this is a tricky topic, because you have this ethical responsibility of the jury. I just made a meeting with the jury, and they are afraid, because they know that all the films are very important. So they feel somehow the responsibility of choosing one of them. And also, we have a president in the jury. So we have a lot of students from a university in Italy, but also every year a different president is a director. This year we have Costanza Quatriglio, which is great. And she also directing the School of Documentaries in Palermo, or the School of Centro Sperimentale di Cinematografia. So she is really very concerned in making the good choice, because it's not the best restoration. It's the best film that could deserve a new life in this very sad environment that is not very easy for film in the theater. So... what I said to the students a few minutes ago is, try to imagine to have your own cinema theater, and you want to propose a classic film, but also you have to have somehow paying the ticket. I mean, it's culture and industry, as always. Yes, you want to promote culture, but also you want to make a real real distribution.
Sure.
So this is the idea of the prize. Not for the documentary. Documentary is different, because the documentary are world premiere, so they are called in a more traditional way to express their ideas of which is the most interesting documentary in the section. We have 9 documentaries only, as you know.
Right, and these are documentaries about the history of film.
About history of films, about directors, or theme of history of cinema.
Right.
They are related to the topic.
So, we're going to take a short break, but yes. we've got more coming because when we come back, we're going to actually talk about the films in this year's program, the retrospectives of this year's program. So, stay with us. Fred Film Radio, and we're back. I'm Matt Micucci, and I'm still in the company of Stefano Francia Di Celle, co-curator of the Venice Classics section. And we're actually going to be talking about the movies now, the movies that are restored and the retrospectives that are presented this year at the 2019 Venice Film Festival. So, you know, sit down, sit back, relax, maybe drink a cup of coffee, and we'll be here chatting about these movies. And the first one we're going to start off, this list is kind of random. I just took the list from the website, so that's the idea. That's the lineup that we're going to be following. The first one is The Incredible Shrinking Man, from 1957, Jack Arnold. For those who don't know Jack Arnold, he was one of the most famous sort of filmmakers in the sci-fi genre of American films. And you may know some of his titles, including It Came from Outer Space, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, and Tarantula, all of these types of film in the mid-20th century. These films are kind of looked down upon for a long time. But over the last few years, and maybe even further than that, maybe it's been a few decades, they have been totally reevaluated as new generations of filmmakers have come out and actually said outright, I love these films and I was influenced by them.
Yes, yes, absolutely. When Universal Pictures proposed us this restoration, we were absolutely certain that would be the right idea to show it in Venice, because it's a good link between the old cinephile generation and the new audience, because it's a very interesting and entertaining movie, full of ideas, full of tricky things, and the man becomes very, very small. There is the fight with the cat, the house become a theater of little tragedies, and there is this science fiction theme treated in a very clever way. It's not battle against aliens, it's not invasion. In that time, science fiction was basically based on battles between worlds. This is a more intimate story with also very clever psychological relations in the plot, and Matheson is the writer of the book, which is the base of the film. So Matheson is also a great science fiction writer, and this is maybe one of the most classical films we have this year, because a lot of people know already the film, but. Also, the in English exactly is trick, when you make a visual effect, could be also called trick or so the visual effects are quite naive.
Hands on, that vintage special effects, unlike the tradition of Georges Méliès. Exactly. When you think about it, with the start stop, it's all stuff that today would be there's YouTube videos that are more spectacular in that sense, but I love that.
Yes. And this is the restoration, since some visual effects were made on the print. When they found the original print, they realized that some problems were due to the fact that you had to recreate this material creation of visual effects on the prints.
Right.
So it was complicated to bring this to digital life.
Right.
And but of course, this is an American restoration. The American laboratories are great.
They have the resources in every sense.
Exactly. And
it's interesting what you said. The special effects were done direct. Some of them were done directly on the film, on the print.
Exactly.
So that's something that's very interesting to consider when we consider the way special effects were done, you know, even back then. We have to move on because there's so much to talk about. So sadly, I think around this time last year, we lost one of the greatest art house filmmakers on an international level. I think he's one of the most loved, but also most hated by some people. But I'm talking about Bernardo Bertolucci. There's two films screening here in the Venice Classics section. The Grim Reaper from 1962, The Spider Stratagem from 1970. The Grim Reaper is particularly interesting because when he directed that, that was his debut feature, and he was 21 years old. 21 years old. And it was written by none other than Pier Paolo Pasolini. I've heard, in fact, that in the style of that movie is very influenced by Pasolini when you look at it. So there's a lot of respect on the part of Bertolucci. But I think that it's a really interesting film. Has maybe some similarities to Akira Kurosawa's Rashomon as well. And then we've got The Spider Stratagem. I would say also that these two films are not the obvious choices when you would put together a tribute to Bertolucci. But I think also it's in Venice's responsibility in particular to shine a light on Bertolucci films that risk being forgotten. We've all seen Last Tango in Paris and all these films. Si, the Conformist.
Si, si, si.
But The Grim Reaper and The Spider Stratagem, not so much maybe, right?
Yes, this is mainly for two reasons. First of all, Bertolucci has been several times at the Venice Film Festival. He received the Golden Lion for Life Achievement Awards. So big films have been screened here several times in a very good way. Second thing, the big films of Bertolucci have already been restored. So we only show restoration in world premiere. So we give this first screening to the audience. So we knew that Film Archive were working on these particular films, which are very, which compose a very interesting duo, because as you said, Comare Secca is meeting with Pasolini, maybe. Bertolucci declared to have discovered cinema, art, and poetry through Pasolini. He met Pasolini thanks to his father, the poet Attilio. And he directed Comare Secca just because Pasolini didn't want to do it, because everything was prepared for Pasolini as a direction. Then Pasolini focused on other things and said, okay, Bernardo, just do it. And he did this film, which is very Pasolinian, in the shape, in the title. The plot is the same story seen from different angles, like Rashomon. But also is you see a Pasolinian reality, Pasolinian characters, but with a different style. And Bertolucci was very brave and clever in finding his own language with a Pasolini content, and the result is a very strange film, full of atmosphere, full of sadness also, and also it's the first film by Bernardo, so for a tribute, I think it's very strong. The second film, and this film is has been restored by Cineteca Nazionale, so it's the what Cineteca Nazionale is doing for Bertolucci now. The second film is Strategia del Ragno. Strategia del Ragno is made and financed by another important film archive in Italy, which is Cineteca di Bologna. Mm-hmm. And in this case, Cineteca di Bologna has been supported by a private supporter who decided to finance the restoration. He's a psychiatrist, and he's a great film lover, and he is the third film he support for the restoration. He started with Marco Ferreri. He did another contribution to Novecento, Bertolucci, and this is the film that really wanted to bring to a new life, because The Spider Strategy really needed a new restoration, because you know that the color, the red, Bertolucci conceived the visual aspects of the film with Vittorio Storaro, and every visual details is very important. And unfortunately, this film has been made for the television.
Yes.
Who broadcasted the film in black and white, because at that time...
Really?
The television was... So,
yeah,
really,
exactly.
It's something that, the restoration... now there is a copy in night television,
yes.
In color, but the color are completely fading. And so this is really one of the most... urgent and necessary restoration, besides the fact that Bertolucci unfortunately left us a few months ago.
He left us, but he left a lot of good stuff behind for us to dig into.
Yes, and Claire Peplo, his widow, the director, he will be here to promote the restoration and also to announce several activity around the Bertolucci work in the future. So
that's so exciting. Great performance by Alida Valli in that film. I think also anyone who speaks Italian would appreciate, in a musical sense, even the accents in that movie so much, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, more from the program of this year's Venice Classics, if we can get through it in one sitting. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Fred Film Radio, and we're back. I'm still Matt Micucci from the 2019 Venice Film Festival in the company of one of the co-curators of Venice Classics, Stefano Franciadicelle, who I thank for coming once again. And we're actually at the moment going through the restored and the retrospectives, the films that are being screened as part of the Strand. And we are having trouble actually just having any sort of good rhythm, because we keep getting stuck because we have so much to say about these films. But we're going to try and really speed things up now. And this is going to be hard, because who have we got next? We've got... who do we have next? We have Luis
Buñuel, Ensayo de un Crimen, The Criminal Life of Archibaldo de la Cruz. The first things to say is that we... adore to have Mexican classical films in the selection, always. I mean, we all during the year, Alberto and I, okay, which Mexican film we will have this year, because I think it's really a very lively filmography. Mexico, we love Mexico, we love new filmmaker of Mexico, and we think Buñuel is the great master. There were also some restoration in Cannes Classique, so this year is a little bit an important year for new restoration of Buñuel film, and Ensayo de un Crimen is maybe one of the most intriguing and deep portrait of human psychology that they succeed in doing his filmography. I mean, Buñuel is it's hard to say which are the periods and the most important films in his life, but this is one of the great film.
It is, yes. It's amazing, and we should... I wish we could talk about it more. In fact, I read that what's more remarkable about this film as well is that apparently it was made during an economic crisis of Mexico,
yes,
which
yes.
makes things more remarkable when you think about the resources that he had to work with. But he was great, and it's fantastic. Again, a film that isn't the one that people talk about when they talk about Buñuel, so that's another thing to respect the section for. Moving on, we've got The Crossing of the Rhine. I haven't seen this film. I am familiar with the works of the director.
Yes, you have not seen the film, because the film has been made in the 1960, mm-hmm. and at that time, a lot of critics and people going to the cinema found the film too conventional, relating to what was going on in French filmography, because the Nouvelle Vague was starting, and a lot of people were deceived by a conventional language that the film used. But as a matter of fact, we saw the film again, because Gaumont, in this case, proposed the restoration, and we found it very interesting in a different stream. I mean, it's not Nouvelle Vague, of course, but André Cayatte is very strong in describing ethical and psychological problems of the men involved in social issues. So the issues of the film is the Second World War And there is the theme of being associated or not with the German invasor. And it's very subtle, this film. Charles Aznavour is the main character, and he's doing a great performance. And besides that, this film received the Golden Lion in Venice Film Festival that year.
That's right, I read that.
So
I think 70 years ago.
It was quite almost a forgotten lion, because nobody remembers very well that Kayat won this prize, because Kayat himself has been a little bit forgotten. So the idea of this selection was to bring to new life a film which is important, also to see in another way this particular period of critics and cinema and cinema of the 60s.
A very, very exciting time in France. It's good to see what else was happening beyond the stuff that, you know, filmmakers like Godard, Truffaut, all of those people were making, right? All right, so we have to move on. And actually, the next film that we have is another film that I haven't seen. It's by Vittorio Cotafavi.
Okay. Vittorio Cotafavi is director who had a very varied life, artistical life. He started with film of machis,
like peplum.
Gladiators, peplum. He did very different things, but then he focused on melodrama and on film more involved in the creation of the artistic level. And Maria Zef is one of his masterpieces. Is set on the mountain of Friuli. Is made with non-professional actors, and the language of the film is the Friulan language.
Wow!
So we will have Italian subtitles. The story is very sad to sisters that are living a very hard time in this natural landscape, which is very nice but also very tough for people living there. And this is a way also of discovering what Rai Television, the Italian state television, made for cinema in that period, because this film has been made thanks to the Sede Regionale Friuli Venezia Giulia, the place of Rai in Friuli Venezia Giulia. And Rai Teche is the Rai archive. Is bringing this restoration to Venice.
Right, Friuli Venezia Giulia being the region where this film was set. And I think this is his second last film too, which is interesting, because it's like he had this artistic rebirth late in his career.
Yes, yes.
And the interesting fact that I wanted to point out about this film is that, because I didn't know it, I went on IMDb and I checked out how many people had rated it since the beginning of that website. Can you guess how many rated it? 21 people. And we're talking about the biggest film website in the world, and it's been around for a long time, so hopefully there'll be more people rating
this film as we go on. It was not easy to see the film until this restoration, so this DCP, I received today a request from other film archives, so
we still
really
have it.
Yes,
that's what's important. And also it contributes to the very modern debate of what is cinema. Is TV cinema? Is some, you know, there's so many things that we could, people can talk about just considering the way in which it was produced. But carrying on with this IMDb trend, because I'm going to make an exception from just looking at the titles in the catalog, because I wanted to make a point. Another film, for example, that only got 34 ratings, I think, near 30 ratings on IMDb, was the next film that I wanted to talk about, Pigeon Shoot. This actually I have seen, and I think it's terrific. It's amazing. I love it. I think it would fit in well, actually, with, I think I mentioned it earlier, Salò, some in a double bill of some sort. What can you tell us about this film?
First thing, Internet Movie Database is not a big consultant for Italian cinema, because, they are not big films, but they are important films.
Yeah.
So, for example, being in the internet, there are Italian sites that of course are more concerned with Italian heritage, and so the situation is different. Mm. Unfortunately, Internet Movie Database doesn't have a team focused on Italy. Mm. And maybe Italy is far away from the center of
from
cinema
in the
world.
Superhero movies.
Maybe. But this is absolutely not true because, for example, Venice is one of the most important film festivals in the world, also because of the resonance of the screening in Venice. And all the great filmmakers in Cannes, Berlin, everywhere tell you, okay, I love neorealism, I mean, Italian cinema for me is very important, it's story. So maybe I would suggest Internet Movie Database management to make a reflection. I mean, Maria Zef is really difficult to see.
Yes.
Tiro al Piccione, less difficult, and moreover, Giuliano Montaldo is more internationally known than Cottafavi. Cottafavi is really a great filmmaker to discover, but really he made a lot of things in Italy, linking theater, cinema, and television in Rai Television. Mm. So I can understand that in UK they don't know him. I mean, in France, Cottafavi has maybe Cottafavi has been more loved in France than in Italy in the last 20 years. So in France, Cinémathèque Française devoted to him a tribute, so it's an interesting figure.
Right. It's just because of retrospectives like these that these legacies continue. So it's great. And from that, I think we're going to talk about something that is a little more popular. You know, David Cronenberg is quite a famous director. Crash is one of his most polarizing films. You either hate it or you love it. You're either shocked by it or you're completely wrapped up in its visual world. We're talking about a film that, after all, is about people who take sexual pleasure from car crashes, right?
Yes, yes, yes. The great... well, last year we had David Cronenberg as a Golden Life Achievement Award in Venice. And the idea was, when we told to him what is the film you would like to show related to this award, he was thinking about Crash. But the problem was that his own Crash, I mean the version screened in Cannes at that time, was not available anymore, because then the distribution made cuttings, made some changes for the distribution, also in order to avoid the NC-17
rating.
So it was, I mean, Crash is not a very old film, but if you want to make a good screening of Crash, until yesterday it was not possible. So Jeremy Thomas, the producer, decided to work on a new restoration, and we are proud to present it. I think all people, you are true, the public was divided at the time, but this time all the public will love it, also because Cronenberg will come again to Venice. He really wants to support. He also thinks that with this new version, the audience will have more possibility to like the film.
Okay, so we're going to take one more break, I think, and then we're going to go through everything that's left, whether we like it or not. Stay with us, don't go away, we'll be right back. Fred Film Radio, and we are back, hopefully, for the final part of our podcast. You know, it's been exciting so far. We've been going through, it's been a journey of going to Venice Classics with the co-curator of the section, Stefano Franciadicelle. And we would have a lot more films to talk about. We would have a lot more, but unfortunately, we have to be conscious of time. So during the break, we decided that we would just focus on two more. Even though all of the films deserve attention, we just decided that we didn't have enough time. And we really could talk forever about each one of these entries, so we're also cutting it short on that. But one of the films that... Okay, so we're going to start off with two films first. It's a spotlight on Iran, a country with such an amazing cinematic culture. But here we're actually talking about two, let's say, short films.
See.
And they actually are two amazing films. One of them is my favorite film, one of my favorite films, The House is Black. But I'll let you talk about it a little more.
Yes, this was a discovery of last year, Venice Classics, because last year we brought to Venice the long features of Ebrahim Golestan, Bracken Mirror. Bracken Mirror is a great Iranian long features that was supposed to be in Venice in the 60s. This means the festival invited the director and the film, then they lost his traces because he went to Paris to make subtitles, so they decided to cancel the film from the selection, and then Golestan arrived with the cans of the film, but the program was closed, so it was really important. By the way, Ebrahim Golestan lives in England.
96 years old.
And because he left Iran, but in this period, in the 60s, he was a great producer and director, and he made really a strange filmography, working as a propaganda director for the state at that time, but as a matter of fact, finding a very original and clever way to make films that are like incomparable.
Can we say? They're poetic, but also very real. I think that there's so much power. It's like they show or prove that cinema has that power of representing things that are out there, but maybe we don't see. Representing people that maybe we don't see. When we talk about the houses,
houses, because one of the great thing Golestan did was give a camera to Farouk Farojad. he was at the time and is one of the most important poet of the 19th century. You know how poetry is important for Iranian culture.
Yes,
everybody's poet in Iran, and they are temples, a dome. It's amazing. I've been to Tehran, and there are a lot of people reading everyday poems. And Farouk Farojad was also a woman, a very independent woman. So there is also a political energy in her. Unluckily, she died very young.
32.
So this is the only film she made could be the start of a great filmmaking career, but she had to stop. And I'm very glad to hear that you already knew The House is Black, which is a case really also in critics, because some French critics in a way brought this parable of life through a documentary of a leprosary, because this is the theme. And Chris Marker also praised the short. So the restoration is very simple. It's to give digital life to this film. And again, Cineteca di Bologna is involved with Mitra Farahani. Mitra Farahani is an Iranian filmmaker who is very close to Golestan. She is working on a documentary with Golestan and Godard talking about cinema. So I hope we will see this documentary soon in Venice. And so this is really a peak of the critics' choice in Venice Classics this year.
Unbelievable. I can't wait to watch that film. Actually, I should say, The Hills of Maverick, I've also seen. I think that's an amazing film, too. I've only seen it once before. It's great to see that one also screened in the festival. We have to move on, unfortunately. This was the opening film of the festival that we're going to talk about next. Ecstasy.
The opening, we decided to open with Ecstasy because of the story of the film and the festival. As you know, in 1934... the film has been shown. It was the second edition of the festival, and the film provoked a big scandal because of the scene of the naked body of Hedwig Kiesler, the actress that then became Hedy Lamarr. This screening was also a way to celebrate the festival, to remember the glorious first years of the festival. You know, the festival is the oldest festival in the world. So and also it was also a way to give up with the nude scene. I mean, okay, there is a nude scene that is really nothing now, seen today. But maybe the scandal was the plot of the film, because the woman was unsatisfied with her sexual life, her wedding life, so she decided to stop with this. She asking the divorce. Right. You can imagine in Italy, the divorce arrived 50 years later.
So
a woman naked, seeking for her sexual satisfaction and asking the divorce. You know, also the Vatican, the Pope prohibited the film. So
that was the, why, really.
There was a lot of things that maybe help. And also to see the film again in this beautiful restoration, they involved 9 film archive to make the restoration, because it was a very difficult restoration. And also you can realize that the film is experimental. The film is between silent and sound, so it is a very interesting soundtrack with Giuseppe Becce, the composer, who made a theory about the use of music in that recorded films, because it was the first year of the sound film. Right. So also the music was, the concept of music was different, because before the music was live, but when you have to produce a soundtrack, things are different, of course. And then you can see the influence, for example, of Eisenstein in Ecstasy, the final Absolutely. Part of Ecstasy with
yeah.
the workers,
the labor,
with
the
land,
yeah.
the nature, the landscape. So it was a very good idea to open the festival with that screening, and the public liked it very much.
Yeah.
The restoration somehow is really what the film was at that time. So no. Perfect in terms of technique. The format is 1:19, right. Very strange. You know, the silent format is 1:33. But since we were at the beginning of the sound, a part of the frame was taken by the soundtrack. So they reduced 1:33 to 1:19. And it is strange. It's like very close to a square. After that, my friend David Di Pozzi, the director of l'Immagine Ritrovata Laboratory, who made the restoration, explained to me that then, after 1 year or 2 years, they changed again the format. They changed the ratio in the 35 millimeter,
right.
and they arrived to the normal format for that time, that was 1:37. So we have 1:33, then 1:19 for this little period, and then 1:37, and this is the format of the film before until the Second World War. I mean,
right.
There are exceptions, but there was the main.
I think also it's a fascinating film because of the historical moment in which it falls, especially because Czech cinema after this, which I think is an amazing film. Actually, I find the director as well very great. The stuff that he made before it was fantastic too.
And also the film he made in Italy after. Have you seen it? Ballerine.
No, I haven't.
Two years after Ecstasy, he moved to Rome, and he realized this. He made this film with dancers. Maria Denis was the main. But it's an Italian film. The crew is Italian. The actors are Italian. So it's strange.
Yes,
Ballerine. And absolutely, I totally agree, he's a great filmmaker. And Narodny, I want to pronounce it very well, Narodny Filmovi Arkiv.
Right.
I would like to thank them, the crew. They made an amazing job, and very quick, because we asked them to be ready for yesterday's screening. And Michal Bregant, the director, was great in making this possible.
I know him well. He's a good man. And I told you during the break that I used to spend a lot of time in their cinema when I was in Prague. So it's so exciting. We have to wrap it up, unfortunately. There would have been more films for us to talk about. There was a Fellini. There was a Dennis Hopper in there. But as you can hear from outside, there's a lot going on. And also, we've been talking for so long. Thank you so much for joining us. It was such a great pleasure having you. And finally talking about classic movies that people shouldn't forget, they should rediscover. This is where cinephilia really begins, I think, when you start to get into where, you know, the contemporary films were influenced from and all of the stuff that came before your films that are out in cinemas today. This is where cinephilia starts. Thank you for what you guys do in Venice Classics section. Really, thank you very much.
Thanks to you. Thanks to the whole crew for what you're doing for the festival and for Venice Classics. Good work.
I thank you once again, and this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.